All right. So yeah, as I said, Jordan, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. You're probably a busy guy and you're building some cool stuff. And so we're keen to talk a bit more about that. But the first thing I had a question about, which is maybe taking you back a little bit, is hello, Santa. And it's so cool because it seems, I don't know, like to me, it seems like this cool combination of an idea which kind of is around the holiday season. It's fun, it's interesting, but there's some tech involved as well. And so I know your background is business and management and stuff like that. And so I guess the question is, like, where did that come from? Did you see a hole in the market where it's like, oh, maybe people don't have to come into the shopping center and meet with Santa? Maybe these kids can just do it online. And what did that look like?
Yeah, that's funny. There was a need, and it was my two young kids that loved Santa. Santa's the biggest celebrity for kids under the age of 7, right? They just love Santa. And it still felt like a manual process in the age of the internet and digital immediacy that, like, you mean we have to drive to the mall, put on nice clothes, drive to the mall, stand in line, pay some money, and sit on an actual Santa's lap and do that whole dog and pony
Which is kind
show?
of weird in itself.
It is
Like, if
strange.
aliens were looking down at us, they'd be like, this is such a strange thing that everyone has to do.
I imagine the holiday these traditions are the same in Australia as well, right? It's the whole big deal about Santa. He's the biggest thing on earth for kids. And, at the time, I was a co-founder and COO of this digital agency, and we were doing web development, and we had a handful of clients. And it got to us at a certain point of, like, this is not fun building other people's products, right? Like, yeah, we left our job to start a company, and now with five clients, we have five bosses, right? So it was like, there's got to be something better. So we decided to, focus on our own product ideas, and we had a handful of product ideas. The first one that we kind of floated out there was Santa, virtual Santa, where kids around the world could have a video call with Santa Claus. And this was in 2013, so that's almost 9 years ago, right? So this is, relatively early in the video chat world, right? So we built our own native app and our own, like, routing system that routed these calls from families around the world to Santas around the world. And it was a great, great learning experience, just kind of learn by doing. And it was a ton of fun.
Also, it was a, sorry, it was like a two-sided, almost like a two-sided marketplace where someone could come on as a Santa and then someone could come on as a consumer and you'd connect the two. Is that right? I guess in my head, I was like, oh, maybe Jordan had like a friend and everyone was thinking like he looks a lot like a Santa or he doesn't have a job. Let's get this guy a job. But no, okay, it was more complex than that.
We hired dozens and dozens of Santa
Wow.
actors around the world. It was a whole operation. We hired a chief Santa officer, and
Any elves or no elves?
we had some digital elves. We had some 3D rendered elves.
Wow. Okay.
It was
That's
a
awesome.
whole operation. It started out as an MVP, and we just paid the Santa hourly, and then we figured out, wow, there's something here. So we scaled up operations, and we took an app. We opened up application process for Santa. We had a high standard, and there was, like, this little test interview that you had to go through and record yourself. And we those that we liked, and we sent a backdrop around the world to, like, make sure all the backdrops the same.
Like a physical one.
And this is before you could do, like, the live back green screen backdrop thing. If they didn't have a beard, we'd ship them a beard, and we did the whole thing, and we had a mobile app, we had a website. This was like, if within a few months, we had the idea in July and started working on it, and then we launched in November, just in time for, like, people to start thinking about Santa again. So yeah, it was a blast. It was really the first major, like, 0 to 1 moment where it was like, I think we have something here. Let's figure it out. Let's do it. Let's go.
That's so cool. And then you sold it, right?
And we sold it. Yeah.
That's so good. That's amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of ideas, so like in terms of all the people that across our podcast that have mentioned 0 to 1, Peter Thiel's you know, startup book, I've never seen it applied to a Santa startup. So that's actually really good. And one thing that I was going to say is that, so like you're a builder in the world, the Web3 space now, and you're moving more into the consulting space. So in my mind, what that draws for me is a lot of comparisons between Silicon Valley and the partners of Y Combinator and Sequoia and stuff, going from tech founders in the early 2000s to now the guys that have made it. So they're the guys that are that high level kind of consultants and founders. And so like, yeah, they've gone from being those founders to being consultants. I think one thing that we've kind of seen is that that Web3 space is so young and scrappy still. All those founders are still so up and coming, maybe similar to a lot of tech founders, you know, 20 years ago. So if you were, say, looking for an idea, so you started that that Santa idea, but if you were looking for an idea today, is the most important thing that you're looking for the initial idea, or is it someone who's already built a community, or is it someone who's already has like a DAO structure laid out but has no great idea? What's kind of the one most important thing that you're looking for in a founder?
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. And it's funny to go from something silly from Santa already into the deep question. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, the wild ride here, sorry.
0 to 100, like, you know.
Yeah, that's right. It's hard depending on one thing. It's different for every person I talk to or idea. And it also seems like a cliche nowadays to say, oh, the idea is not that important. It is to a point, right? It needs to be something viable. But when I'm talking to founders, and I talk to founders in several different contexts, right? I do some angel investing here and there. I consult, I advise, in like a venture studio kind of model, I'll partner up, and launch products that way. And in the same, you know, across the board, it's similar. Like, they have to have a passion for the space, right? It's kind of easy to point at the Web3, the crypto market cycle, and where 6 months ago, you could get away with, you know, an okay idea with some decent art and, you know, run of the mill tech. But now you need a lot more than that. It's really the authenticity that I look for, and someone who's thought through all these things and not just trying to grab at something cool. Oh, we need a metaverse. We need to build a metaverse. And, oh, I have this friend who's a really cool 3D artist. We're going to go build a metaverse. Okay, but why? And what does that mean to you? And you're building a platform. Okay, we've got a bunch of platforms. How is it different? So it's really just the authenticity of the user or of the entrepreneur, and have they thought this whole thing through. And it's adaptability and it's flexibility. And it's like, okay, we're not going to get this right in our very first experiment, right? We're going to have to iterate and learn a whole bunch. And that vision, may stay the same, but like the goals and the product may change over time, and you have to be ready for that.
Wow. That's like pretty refreshing, to be honest. Like, we talk to a lot of people and there's a lot of like, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't have to say, but there's a lot of hype projects and there's a lot of, people who are pumped on the tech, and sometimes I do leave calls and I'm just sort of thinking like, you know, did we really talk to that person, or was that sort of just their game face? But I feel like, yeah, even this conversation, like, I feel like the way you present yourself is really authentic, and I guess it makes a lot of sense too, because like, I think like you attract the type of person that you are. And so, I don't know if you purposely try and be like authentic, but you seem like such a nice guy. And so like it makes sense that that's what you're looking for. And I assume that's what you're finding. I guess maybe on that vein, I do have some more questions about your early years, but I guess, as you say, we're deep here already. so you've sort of started two new projects. The first one's VenturePunk, which is really interesting, and maybe Isaac sort of touched on a little bit there without mentioning it. But one just before that is Skylab, right? And so it looks really cool because it is really community focused. And so around what you just said and what I was saying, how it seems really hard in this space to create an authentic community full of authentic people. I noticed that there's I think you've done a form where people have to fill in, you know, who they are, what they've done, stuff like that. How can you tell that someone's authentic, and how can you create a community that is authentic? I noticed you've done some in-person meetups. Is that sort of where you're doing it? How important is that for you?
Yeah, just to remind the audience, Skylab.xyz, that's our it's our community of builders. So it's Web3 builder community, and it's really the whole vibe is builders helping builders. And it's really early on, a couple months along. We've got a couple hundred people in the Discord, and it's really just about how can we add value just by bringing people together. So it's entrepreneurs, investors, engineers, creatives, very organically. It's growing organically, and that's kind of been the goal, where a bunch of ideas, oh yeah, well, let's have a token gated access and let's do this and let's do that. But just intentionally, because I've had other projects that kind of, for better or worse, just kind of took off and, you know, hey, let's start a DAO, or hey, let's drop a token. And with Skylab, I've intentionally just tried to pump the brakes a little bit. And those are all great ideas. Let's write them down, but let's just figure out how we can provide value, just because there is so much hype out there. So I intentionally, getting to your question, I try really hard to keep it high signal. I probably only allow 30% of the applicants, and of those that apply, just a small fraction of people I allow in. And that's not really just necessarily to shut people out. It's really just to, like, before we start opening the gates here, let's figure out a pattern that works. Let's figure out a model for this community that works before we start allowing
everybody. Are you trying to establish a culture? Is that sort of what you're trying to do with the early people?
Yeah, totally. I think, we've all been part of communities that you just resonate with, and you're excited, and you know, I'm sure a lot of people in this space are in 40 to 50 different Discord groups, right? And Telegram and Twitter, and trying to manage it all. And I've been a part of some that, you never check again, and others that you want to keep going back to, because you know there's insight, you know there's value there, or you appreciate the friendships you've made. So that's totally intentional about this culture. And a lot of the culture is driven by me. A lot of it is kind of key members and active members are helping set that culture. Certain people are great about greeting new users, new members. We have done in-person meetup. We met up for the first time officially at NFT NYC a couple of weeks ago. And what's really cool is that even before that official meetup, members were meeting up unofficially, like, hey, I'm going to this event, let's meet up. Or, hey, I live here, let's meet up. And that was really encouraging, right? I think if I had launched this thing and a couple weeks later, no one was really talking and no one was really engaging, it'd be okay on to the next experiment. But like people got it and saw a lot of value, and there's a lot of value happening, you know, over DMs. So it doesn't always get, you don't always see it in the public channels. But I think, you know, there is a balance between letting things happen organically and like establishing some goals and having someone in the middle say, hey, let's go that way. I think the pendulum is kind of swinging back the other way, and it needs to be a balance of someone like me pointing where we should go, and yet still be open to ideas and be open to pivot and be flexible. And maybe I'm too nice and I need to just say, hey, this is where we're going. But so far it's working out, because the feedback so far has been great.
It seems like people are catching on anyway. So it sounds like you have some natural thing where it's like, oh, if I come and mess with this, then you know, it's all going to tip the balance. So with the going back to the VenturePunk side of it, Basically, as you were saying, new angel and VC and kind of operation like that, where you'll be focusing on that consulting and labs and capital side, right? So in a traditional later VC stage, the capital allocators are looking for that user growth, that monetization per user, that how much runway that project has to run. What's the pathway to profitability in terms of a company? Sometimes in the earlier stages, they're just looking at the idea and the execution so far. You know, they don't really have any actual metrics to pull into their models. When you're investing in and allocating into a new project, are you actually looking for the same things as what an old school project would be looking for? Or have you got a whole new set of data, a whole new set of metrics that you're actually valuing something off?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there is some flexibility in the early days, and I'm really most excited about like pre-seed and seed level ventures, where there is less of like formal, hey, here's what you need to do. Here are the numbers we need to hit. You don't, obviously there needs to be a path to profitability, but we don't have to have that all figured out just yet. And I think that being said, there are some things that I've learned over the years of launching companies and creating communities from scratch and building teams from scratch and products and finding a group of users and solving a problem, that even in the early days, like there is a formula or at least a structure where you can show progress, right? Or show, you know, I'm a big fan of the lean startup methodology and customer development and all that stuff. And I think it can apply. I mean, it has to apply in some respect, even in Web3. If you're not building something that people are interested in, stop immediately and find something that's worthwhile, right? The worst thing you could do is waste time building something that nobody cares about. Even if you really, really care about it, if no one's willing to pay you time or money to use your product, then something's off. So, and this sort of model where it's kind of this hybrid model of like a venture studio, investment group, consulting, it's perfect for that, at least for me, right? Like I like work. I have got a bunch of different ideas. I love working with other entrepreneurs. But at the end of the day, it's let's brainstorm ideas. Let's jot down, you know, 50 different ideas, pull out a handful that could be viable just in conversation here. Let's do a quick write-up. Let's do a one pager on each of these ideas. And then you kind of quickly, you know, share them with your groups, share them with friends. Certain ones kind of float to the top. Okay, let's create a prototype or an MVP or a clickable prototype, if that's even it, and get it in the hands of users or get in the hands of potential investors and see if there's anything there. So it's that classic build, measure, learn loop where you can kind of turn it into a process, kind of turn it into a science, at least help make those decisions a little easier, reduce the risk by objectively looking at as much as you can. Not always possible, but I think that just sets you up so much better than just like blindly charging into building something that is cool. Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay. So obviously you've been on both sides of it now. I suppose later in life or later in your career, you're getting to meet new founders and make those funding decisions. But you've been on the flip side of that a bunch of times. We've mentioned one. The other one, which most people, if they know you, will know you for, is the meme project. And so I think it would be worth at least mentioning at this point. And so I kind of looked at it. I read a few articles about it, and it's actually such an interesting time. And you kind of touched on it there a while ago where you were talking about like intentionally pumping the brakes on some of these projects because you've seen the upside of like the flip side of that. And so it would be interesting to hear your reflections on that. But maybe if I could just provide a bit of context for people who are unaware. So at the time you were working at Consensus is my understanding, and you came up with this tweet, which would be interesting to know what the origins were. And it was kind of just a bit of fun with what I took away from it, which was kind of like, hey, you know, there's all of these NFT projects that are being built right now. It was in, you know, major hype phase at that point. I think maybe it was 2020 or something like that. You can clarify. And so you're kind of like, hey, imagine if we had like a drag and drop protocol where it's like, you can just create your DeFi project in 5 minutes or whatever. And you said, you know, the token could be called meme token. It all just seems like a bit of a joke. And then one thing led to another. I think maybe someone anonymous created the token. Then a community was formed. And then somehow, I don't understand how you can have a community formed out from nothing with all these people who don't know each other. A product came from it. Right? And the product was then, you know, after a while, I don't know, maybe even not after too long, there were some conversations. And it looked like the guy who founded Consensus, which is Joseph Lubin, I think. Yeah, Lubin, that's right. Him and a bunch of other guys, including like Mark Cuban from, you know, Shark Tank and Owns the Mavericks and stuff like that, they ended up buying into or buying the technology and the platform and turning that into Nifty's. And so it's a crazy story, but could you maybe give some reflections on some of that?
Well, you nailed the origin of it. Very, very nice. Yeah, that was it. It just started out as a meme, as a tweet, and then it turned into a community and a bunch of really passionate, interesting people in this community. And it's like, what should we do? And someone had the idea of dropping a token airdrop to early members of this community. And it's like, okay, we have a token that does nothing. I'm trying to, because my name's attached to this thing, I don't want it to like, I don't want it to scam people. So I'm telling people not to buy it. I said, don't buy meme. So that became,
I missed that. Yeah, that's right. You had a website, right?
Yeah. Website was don't buy meme.
Yeah. And that's where you buy it.
And that's how you get it. Yeah. And that was the platform. So it was all just a meme on top of a meme on top of another meme. And
it's wild.
And it was like, hey, we have this token. We should actually like give it some utility. So a couple engineers and I built the platform. And this was in middle of 2020, summer of 2020. So this was before really, you know, Top Shot and some of these other platforms really took off in the NFT space. So we were kind of early in this more recent NFT craze. But we said, what are some things that are cool? Oh, well, yield farming is cool. This is the middle of DeFi summer. And NFTs are kind of cool again. Let's mash them up. So we built like this, almost like this farming protocol where you could stake your meme token and earn NFTs. And we started out with just these silly like crypto celebrity trading cards. And then we started working with actual artists. We worked with Phoocious and a bunch of other really cool artists that are now pretty big names. And it was just so fun. And we built up this community. And then yeah, as you alluded to, we kind of pivoted that into what became Nifty's. And that's, you mentioned Joe Lubin, his fund, Ethereal Ventures. So it's close to Consensus. I also worked at Consensus. And Mark Cuban was a pre-seed investor as well, but we ended up turning into a real company and partnered up with other co-founders. So the original three co-founders of Meme, plus a few other business and media-minded co-founders, went and launched a brand new company, Nifty's, and they launched about a year ago. They launched the product about a year ago. And worked with Warner Brothers in the Matrix NFT collaboration community and Space Jam and Looney Tunes. And they just announced something here with Discovery Channel. So that was a company that I helped start. I co-founded. I took it from, again, nothing to when I left last month, about 35 full-time employees. So it was really fun to kind of take something that really just started, you know, if you trace the origins all the way back, it's just this silly, stupid tweet to something that's, you know, employing 35 people, raising tens of millions of dollars. Like it's pretty insane, that story, if you trace it all the way back.
Can I, so just a question about Nifty specifically. So, Are they essentially, is Nifty's going to these production houses like Warner Brothers and stuff like that and buying the rights, like the IP to use, you know, their characters and stuff like that, and then on selling that in the form of NFTs? Like, I'm just trying to figure out exactly how the mechanics of that work. Is that wrong? Are they just selling NFTs that look like the character? Like, sorry if that's a silly question.
No, that's a good question. Yeah, nifties.com, it's actual legitimate partnerships with Warner Brothers and some of these other groups, and the deal terms depend on the partner, but a lot of times it's more of like a rev share where it's like, hey, you should give us your IP and we're going to go build this and then we'll share in the profits. So it's establishing, you know, those deals. Like, we literally launched on launch day, we launched with Space Jam, you know, with which the week after that, the big movie came out. So it's like, what brand new startup could launch with such a big partner like that? And it's because, you know, of my partners and teammates, you know, my co-founder, or one of my co-founders, Jeff Marsilio, he was an executive at the NBA. And so he had this background in entertainment and entertainment rights and connections to studios. Our first hire was also a media executive. So when you mix that, you know, the background in accounts, and we know how to manage accounts, and we know how to treat studios with respect and creators with respect, with that, hey, we've already built an NFT platform over here. So with Meme, right? So it was like, we're doing this. And it's also, you know, Warner Brothers and some of these other communities or some of these other entertainment groups that were willing to experiment, you know, early 21. And that was really, yeah, the secret sauce of Nifties.
My question is, and it was before you were going to talk about that, but I was going to know, what is your favorite Looney Tunes character, and what's your favorite original moment from the original Matrix?
Oh, jeez. I wouldn't be able to answer that second question.
All right, favorite Looney Tune character. It's got to be Roadrunner. For whatever reason, you know, he just outsmarts the coyote every single time. And then my favorite moment from the original Matrix movie. It's just so cool. And at the time, like, the special effects were so cool. What do they call it? Bullet time, where it's like 3D circular, like a bunch of cameras set up.
That's so cool.
Sorry, I said it first. I just remember, you know, however old I was, teenager at the time, just being blown away at, like, wow, we can do that. Nowadays, movie, like, my kids probably don't even notice what, like, the crazy special effects, because you can't tell what's practical and what's digital. Yeah. But back then, that was just mind blowing.
So true. Did you know today is the 6th anniversary today of MetaMask?
I heard that. I saw that tweet. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Do you have any reflections of, like, your time at Consensus? Like, what were you working on at there and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was there in 19 and 20, and was brought on to be head of product for a DeFi group. So over the time, I worked on several different projects, but early on, it was like DeFi's brand new. Like, the phrase was just termed, like, right when I got there. And it was like, there's so much to build. There's a lot of infrastructure here to build. Where, you know, it's always my passion to be friendly to new users and provide a good user experience. So it's building up tools and, like, infrastructure that can lead to making it easy for new users to figure out DeFi. So I built some protocols and products around that, and helped launch a token network called Scale. And then towards the end, while I was also working on, you know, on the side working on Meme, I started consulting with MetaMask. Actually, I became known as the resident, you know, NFT expert for a bit there in 2020, and was working with MetaMask and some other teams to, like, figure out how can we better support NFTs in
So you've seen, I think you've seen a lot of the newer structures. You've seen, you have your own Discord. You have a very selective community where you only include the best founders. You've got this whole VC venture punk going on. So one thing that I'm really interested in, I've ever since I've heard of a DAO, like, you know, a bit over a year ago, I guess. I've always wanted to know, are DAOs the future structure of companies, do you think? Or do you think that there'll always be space for both in the current, you know, world?
That's it. That what you just said, the last bit about there needs to be both. And where you draw that line, like what the ratio is, I don't know. But I know we're going to see a lot more DAOs. It just makes a lot of sense to have a decentralized form of governance for these groups from just a couple of people to thousands of people. And we want to have decentralized, anonymous people that can add value. DAOs just make sense, but it's not for everything, right? I still think we will see corporations, and we may see something in the middle, right? I know now a lot of people are experimenting with that, which is like DAO and structure, but there's a company kind of behind the scenes. I think we're going to see more and more like regulations and local governments, in the States. Wyoming is really pushing things forward there to like kind of come up with structure, how to make that work. I'm a fan of DAOs. I'm really excited, but they're not a one size fits all thing. They're not going to solve every problem out there. It's really hard to coordinate people, whether you're in a DAO or a corporation or a family. Like, it's just really hard for everyone to kind of pull in the same direction. So it's just another tool, I think.
That's amazing. That's so cool. I feel like you've been relatively successful, I would say, across your life. Like, you've hit the goals that a lot of people would aspire towards. And so if you were looking like introspectively at your time, you know, in your career so far, could you attribute all of that to, like, if you had to, like, one characteristic of yourself, whether it's technical or it's fundamental? Like, is there something that you think, yeah, I think it was potentially my that like allowed me to sort of succeed in these areas?
If I had to come up with one word, I would say curiosity.
Cool.
And it's just kind of taken me from, you know, as a little kid trying to figure out how things work up until now. And it's just, I've been beneficial that the things that I'm curious and interested about are, now you could actually, make a living and, build some cool products. And it's like, but that's it. It's just like, I tend to invest some time. I like many people, just, I only want to work on things that are interesting to me. And, fortunately I've had for the last several years, at least, I've been able to do just that.
Wow. That's so cool. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's kind of been short, but, there's been so much in this and it's been so fun. Hopefully you've enjoyed it a little bit.
No, that was a fun chat. Yeah. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much. And it's been awesome. What you've done is awesome. And I'm going to watch you and see what comes next. I think there's going to be some awesome projects coming out of Skylab. I already saw there's one, which is like I'm going off track here, but I should mention it. Because you're announcing some of the projects that are coming from the founders within your community. And I noticed one of them was like a tokenized meetings protocol, which is interesting. It's like, you can meet with me if you have my token. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And so I think there's going to be a lot of awesome stuff coming out of it. And so, yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks for shilling. Yeah, that's great.
Where can people find, where can people find out more about you and the projects that you're working on?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Sorry.
I wake up and I go on Twitter, and then it's the last thing I do at night as well, as much as it's probably a bad habit. But I would say Twitter, it's at Jordan Lyle. It's the, I don't know, is this a video thing?
Yeah, it's a video.
If anybody can see my punk, that's me. I have to put him here in kind of picture in picture, because not everybody knows what I look like. in the flesh. So gotcha. Look for my purple hat.
Yep.
Punk.
Awesome. Can I just say, I've noticed there's a lot of my friends that I hang out with don't know a single thing about Twitter and think that it's super boring. And then there's this community of like, in this community, like community of Web3, business, finance, stuff like that. And they like literally lived and breathed on Twitter. It's just crazy, the dichotomy between these two different groups of people.
Yeah. And it's not just crypto Twitter. There's all sorts of industries. So if Twitter is boring or not valuable or not even just like entertainment factor, but like if you're not learning or engaged, then you're just following the wrong people.
True. Wise words. That's a good life. That's good life work, actually.
There you go.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.